Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Don't touch that dial. You are indeed listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, but those two fine gentlemen have thrown me the microphone for the day. Indeed, thrown the mic all the way to lovely Chelsea, Michigan, and the nationally acclaimed Purple Rose Theater. My name is Paul Strolley, and some of you long-term listeners may remember when I sat alongside Mr. Sterling during the first 5 years of State of the Arts, but my relocation to Chicago has put the more than wonderful Andrew David James in the driver's seat. I'm very happy, however, to take the role of roving reporter with today's interview and the third in our regional spotlight series. So please welcome Artistic Director of the Purple Rose Theater, Mr. Guy Sandel. Guy, how are you? Thanks for joining me today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Very, very excited about this. And we have so much to talk about today. We're just going to leap right into it. And we're going to let people know about the Purple Rose and, of course, about our lovely guest here. Founded in 1991 by acclaimed actor and Chelsea native Jeff Daniels, the Purple Rose Theater Company is a creative home for theater artists to define a collective Midwestern voice. It is a place for emerging talent and seasoned professionals to learn more about and to practice their craft, a place for patrons of the arts to laugh, cry, and perhaps even learn something new. Today, audiences travel as far as 90 miles or more to enjoy quality professional productions at affordable ticket prices here in historic downtown Chelsea. Purple Rose Theater Company continues to actively promote the development of new American theater and its practitioners. They also strive to provide valuable educational opportunities not available elsewhere and earn the respect of the national theater community as well as their neighbors right here in southern Michigan. So this gentleman who is seated to my right is sort of the chief, I would venture to say, the chief cook and bottle washer of all things here at the Purple Rose Theater. But let me give you a little thumbnail sketch on Mr. Sandel. He is a professional actor, director, and teacher. He celebrated his 21st anniversary as artistic director recently. He has directed over 50 plays for the Purple Rose Theater Company, including 39 world premieres. In addition, he teaches workshops and lectures at the Purple Rose and around the country. A proud member of Actors Equity Association, SAG-AFTRA, and the Stage Directors and Choreography Society. He is serving as producer for the current production of God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza, but he will be directing the next three productions in the 2017-2018 season for Purple Rose Theater, all world premieres. And I think it would be hard-pressed to find another theater company in the country that could make that claim. Those are Sherlock Holmes and the Adventure of the Elusive Ear by David McGregor, Flint by Purple Rose founder Jeff Daniels, and Willow Run by Jeff Duncan. Boy, you do very well here if your first name is Jeff.
Yeah, well, sure. It's a lot of kind of a cult. Yeah.
So, Guy, first off, what was your sort of baptism here? How did you find out about this place? Did you start as an actor? Did you start immediately with directing here? What was your baptism?
Well, actually, I'd been an actor and director, and my wife and I had our own little theater company for a while, and I was thinking about getting out of the business. I was doing billing and collections for a hospital up in Lansing, Michigan.
Really?
Yeah, it was a horrible, horrible job. And a friend of mine called me up and said, Jeff Daniels is, they're casting a new play by Jeff Daniels, you know, you should get your ass down there and audition. So I thought, you know what, I'm curious about this. I called up, I found out later I got the last audition slot.
Last slot?
So I went down on a Saturday morning and I did a couple of monologues, and the artistic director at the time said to me, you know, you're really good. You're too young for this role, but if there's anything you're remotely right for, we'll call you back. And I left feeling good. I had that day, though, what I think alcoholics call a moment of clarity. The old building we've since renovated had black and white tile floors.
Okay.
And I walked in and I saw that floor, and I thought for a minute I fell down. It was really bizarre. And I knew at that moment that my life would never be the same.
Really?
I did. I just knew it. In fact,
even with just that response of just to be something for you or whatever, not, you know, no formal casting or anything like that. That was just enough.
I've had a few of those, you know, in my life. Not as many as I'd like, but you know, I just knew that you know, I can't explain the feeling. And I called my wife and I said, you know, she said, how'd it go? I said, you know, well, it went pretty well. I felt good about it. But, you know, I told her what happened. And anyway, the true story, Monday, my wife and I were living in a mobile home at the time, which we bought from my brother so he can move his family to another job.
And, you highfalutin actors.
Oh, boy, yeah. And so I'm sitting in the tub after a horrible day at the hospital, and I'm reading a book called Grips, Gaffers, and Best Boys, and it's about people's job descriptions in the film industry.
Okay.
And I swear I was reading the chapter about actors, and there was a story in there about Jeff Daniels being in full drag when he auditioned for The World According to Garb. And the phone rang, and it was the Purple Rose calling me back. So I said, okay, well, so the following Saturday, you know, I go down, I get there an hour and a half early, I memorize the sides, and I walk in, and Jeff was there that day. Jeff had written the play, and it was a comedy. And I walked in, and he looked at me, and he said, well, hi. And I said, hi. And I said, I'm going to put that away. I'm just not going to think about that. But I knew that the actor, wonderful actor named Wayne David Parker, who he had written the play for, and we call him Daba, and he's about 5'6". He's a short guy, and he's a dynamo. And he had gassed some fights for a show that my wife had stage managed a while before that, so I knew him. So I went in, and in the scene, I'm really mad, you know, because he's having...
What was the name of the play again?
The Tropical Pickle.
Tropical
Pickle.
It was
Jeff's
okay.
second play. It was a hilarious comedy.
Okay.
And so I walked in there. I saw him. I felt comfortable. I threw the script down, and I basically picked him up, you know, and sort of put him at my eye level. I'm about 6'1". And I did the whole scene that way. At the end of the thing, I just dropped him.
You held him for the whole scene?
The whole scene. And then I dropped him, and I walked out, and they asked me to stick around. And I heard later, when I walked out, Jeff said, that's the guy. And he was supposed to be a 55-year-old blonde Polish guy. And again, I was like, I think 38 at the time. And he said, not anymore. He's a 36-year-old Italian named Ed Benetti. He changed the role.
On the fly.
And I got the part, and then they made me their first associate artist. They let me direct. I knew how to fix plays, and I realized, though, that I had found a place I'd been looking for 20 years. I found a creative home.
Yeah.
And I turned down leading roles at other professional theaters and just to understudy here for, like, no money. And or very little. And I don't know. I knew that I had found the place that I'd been looking for. And I always swore to myself, if I ever found a place like that, I would stay until they didn't want me anymore. And,
right. It's interesting because having been, I'm involved in God of Carnage now, and it's new to me sort of being back in this. And the process here, and I'm curious about how much of the process is owed to you, is just, it's such a, it's one of these things that, and I'm not going to use the, it's not academic, remotely academic, but the vibe is collegial. And what I mean by that is that there is an ensemble sense that I haven't had since my days in college, where you really had the time and the ability to really deconstruct something. And to do the extensive physical warm-up and theater games and whatnot before even picking up a script is something that barely exists in the professional theater world. And it so shows in the work. It's so apparent. Is that your design? Is that something that you arrived at through discussions with Jeff? Did it just sort of evolve over the 20 to 27 years of this place being in existence? How did that come about?
Well, it evolved. I mean, we're a theater company. We're not just a producing organization.
Okay.
And there's a difference. And it's not for everybody. I mean, we don't do these things because, you know, they're fun to do or they're cool or whatever. We do them because it makes the work better. Right. We are very fortunate. From the first day of rehearsal through opening night, our press opening, we get 6 weeks.
Yeah.
We get 4 weeks of rehearsal, and we get 7 previews. So we have the time, because we do a lot of new work. I feel sorry, you know, we get 3 weeks to put up a new play and 60 hours of rehearsal. It just doesn't do it. I mean, growing, it takes a long time to get some of these things ready. You know, we it really sort of, I just, it was the way that I was trained.
Okay.
And you know, Jeff is very he has a very clear, well-defined idea of what acting is. We kind of call it film acting for the stage. It's a very intimate theater. What we mean is you can see people think. It's hard to fake it in here.
Yeah.
We don't and you get caught immediately doing it. So
you get caught acting.
You get caught acting. Yeah, that's, we hear that all the time. And just the things that, you know, he took from, you know, his experiences at the Circle Rep. I mean, he's a theater guy. He really is. He's an old school theater guy. And yeah, you know, we did a residency for 2 years at Albion College, and that really helped us define our program. And you know, we it's nothing that we invented, but we do take the time to really examine the work. We don't spend a lot of time sitting around a table talking about shit. We just don't.
Right.
We get up. You know, 15 minutes on your feet is worth more than 3 hours sitting at a desk talking about stuff.
Yeah.
You can talk about
I'm writing that one down.
You can talk about the scene, or you can get up and work on the scene.
Yeah.
And you do. We do, especially the first 4 weeks there. We'll spend an hour and a half of rehearsal before we ever get to the text, just exploring things and
it's just so wild.
Because we believe that you play like you practice.
Right.
And that it is a process of distillation, but what you do in rehearsal, regardless of whether it ends up in the final cut or not, it the essence of it is there. It informs the work.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned Circle Rep a moment ago, and I wanted to bring up the incredible apprenticeship program you have here.
Yeah.
And is that modeled? Someone told me that was modeled after Jeff's experience as an apprentice at Circle Rep.
Yeah, Jeff was he's a junior in college, and Marshall Mason, who the Circle Rep is legendary. They basically helped define the current, you know, the off-Broadway scene in New York, and it was basically thrown together so that Lanford Wilson and Marshall Mason could have a place to work. And Marshall was hired as a guest artist at Eastern Michigan University. He's directing a couple plays. Jeff was at Central. He hitchhiked down there and, you know, got cast in both the plays. And Marshall said to him, he said, "You know what you should be doing, right? You and I'm never, you know, I don't do this very often, but if you want to show up in New York this fall, I'll give you an apprenticeship at my theater." So he talked to his parents, he packed up his Volkswagen, he moved to New York, and, you know, about a year and a half later he was on Broadway. But this place was born the day that Jeff Daniels walked into the Circle Rep as a 22-year-old apprentice. And we have modeled the apprentices. It's a general apprenticeship. They're the backbone of the business. They serve about 13 months. And they do everything from clean the building to tear tickets to work in the box office. And they get a lot of great training here. Everybody here is somebody's mentor. We're all constantly learning.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an extraordinary program.
It really is. And it's just the level and the, you know, when you said, you made the comment about mentorship, there is mentorship, but at the same time, the beauty of it is that everyone is sort of on the same playing field. It's a very egoless environment.
Yes.
Everyone is just sort of, they know it's all about the work, and I just find the whole energy to be one that just is so such a joyous climate to create in. Before we get too much farther, I want to throw out some of this information for our listeners to know how to learn more about the Purple Rose. The website is purplerosetheater.org. And theater has the R-E spelling, as it should, purplerosetheater.org. And as I mentioned earlier, this season is God of Carnage, which opens this weekend, Friday night, followed by Flint, world premiere by Jeff Daniels, and then Sherlock Holmes and the Adventure of the Elusive Ear, coming March of 2018, followed by Willow Run on June 14th of 2018. So we will throw that information out a couple more times before the end of our time on the air here, but as I just did mention the season, Guy, can you share with the listeners how do you arrive at your seasons? I mean, is it decided by committee? I mean, I know that Michelle Mountain is a literary manager, a phenomenal actress, actor in her own right, but does she sort of spearhead the choices, or do playwrights just submit? Do you seek out work? How does that work?
Well, yeah, we solicit work. Half the work we do is new. Okay. So we always have 7 or 8 plays in different stages of development. We do what we call greenhouses, purple rose greenhouse.
Right.
It takes a while to grow some of these plays. And we have a wonderful partnership with our library here in town, the Chelsea District Library, winner of the 2008 Bill and Melinda Gates Award for the best small town library in America.
It's a gorgeous space. Yeah. It really is. I spent a lot of time over there.
Yeah, it's terrific. And we do these workshops last anywhere from a couple days to a couple weeks, where we bring in you know, a director and actors and the playwright, and we work on these things. Sometimes we'll do 2 or 3 for one show. But two or three
readings?
Yeah.
Okay.
It falls in my job description to select the plays, but we have a lot of help. Our managing director, Katie Durrell, Katie Hubbard, excuse me, she got married, and she's a former apprentice here, by the way, runs the business side of the operation. We all weigh in. And, Jeff, and then, you know, we run it by Jeff. And I actually had a different play picked to start this season. And Jeff said, what about God of Carnage? And I don't like to do karaoke. I saw, you know, he did the show for a year on Broadway and then in LA.
Well, that's a great way to play.
He was terrific. I said, I don't know, you know. But he said, "Well, no." He said, "Well, it'll be a Purple Rose production. Do your production." And we have a great young director, Lauren Knox, who we're bringing along.
She's also a friend of the apprenticeship program.
Yep. You can't walk through this building without tripping over a former apprentice. our managing director, our office manager, our company manager, our box office manager, wow, stage man, all former apprentices. Yeah. Well, that was the first mandate I got from Jeff when I got this job, was we develop our own talent here.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do readings. We have what we call play slams, where we'll read, you know, a dozen plays in 24 hours. By Thanksgiving, we hope to have the 2018-19 season picked.
Oh, which, really? You do it this early?
Yeah, we'll have a new play by Carrie Krim. That's we're committed to that. Jeff is writing a comedy about women. We're looking at an American classic that we like a lot. And we're doing 3 new plays this year, which is unheard of. I mean, we do 4 plays a year. You can see a play at the Purple Rose 6 or 7 times a week, 43 weeks out of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a little town of 5,000 people. We kick $4 million a year into the local economy. So, I mean, it's a big deal in these. There's a lot of restaurants and stuff. Boy, when we have a show that tanks, and it's only happened a few times, I hear about it from the people who, you know, run the restaurants and all that stuff. So we all, you know, we love comedy here.
Yeah.
I mean, we take it very, very seriously. And, you know, we're not big on jokes, but we like humor, and it's a team effort. But
I think that is one of the reasons I think God of Carnage is such a great choice, because I don't know if there was ever a play that defined the term black comedy. A lot of people tend to just toss that term off because it's even more than that. There's so much going on under the surface with God of Carnage. It's almost like the first time I read it, it was almost like this could almost be a commedia, because with the mask, just the removal of the masks and the shifting of alliances and all the other stuff, it's a great choice. And just what the preview audiences have experienced, you've been talking to preview audiences along with Lauren Knox, and it's so nice to hear that their response is so positive to the work this early.
I got a note yesterday from a woman who saw the matinee on Saturday. And I know we're going to get mail on this one. And there, every once in a while, I get a note from somebody, and there's a couple that I keep in my wallet, you know, and I pull them out just as a reminder from time to time that if we do our work right, this is what's possible. And she was, she had lived through a very similar story like this.
Really?
And it was really, really moving. It's, comedy is about pain. That's what we believe here. And the more it hurts, the funnier it is. I mean, a person's sense of humor is their most personal trait.
Yeah.
It tells me everything that you need to know about somebody, about their character, about, you know, how, I mean, without our sense of humor, I mean, somebody who's lost their sense of humor has truly lost hope.
Oh, yeah.
And without our sense of humor, we'd all jump off a damn bridge. I mean, it's the only thing that gets us through sometimes.
I love the Mel Brooks definition of comedy and tragedy that he talks about in 2000-Year-Old Man. And he says to Carl Reiner, he says, let me tell you what tragedy is. Tragedy is if I cut my finger.
Yeah.
I cut my finger, and then I weep, and I cry, and I go to Mount Sinai for 3 days. And that to me, is tragedy. Comedy is if you fall in an open manhole and die.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, so Woody Allen said, "Tragedy plus time is comedy."
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. I want to go back to talking about the director of this piece, because her her skill set and her ability to get performances, genuine performances out of actors. I've been doing this a while. I don't consider myself any authority, but I've been in the trenches for a little bit. I've certainly been in the trenches longer than our particular director has been on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Old soul, the way that she works is... A lot of that has to, of course, a lot of that is just her genuine talent and her inherent skills. But... I would imagine a lot of it she owes to the process here. I would be, you know, and I don't want to put you in a position of claiming, you know, that you molded her.
You know.
But she's just so wonderfully gifted. And considering that she was an intern a few years ago, was there a causal event? Was there a moment where you realized that this particular director has a gift?
Yeah, actually, and it's going to sound really strange. She was an apprentice. And we were doing a reading at the library, and I needed somebody to read stage directions. Right. So we didn't really rehearse that. I called her and said, you know, you need to come into the library tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, and you're going to read these stage directions. And I heard her read stage directions for 2 minutes, and I knew right away that she could act. Right. And I she was a writer. She shared some of her writing with us. She was one of, it's happened a very few times, but we actually, we were doing a production of 33 Variations by Moises Kaufman, and we, the girl heard her back and had to leave the production, and we put her in it, and she was amazing. And, you know, she finished her apprenticeship, we made her a resident artist, and... as we have done with you, and she, you know, she wanted to direct, and we have this AD lab, and I just knew that from the way that she looked at story, from her understanding of how stories work, and her ability as an actor, because I think actors should direct. We started. You know, training her, and she's been in a lot of shows here, so she's seen, you know, she knows how
it works. Yeah.
She know, we don't bring in, we don't bring in outside directors. We, again, develop our own. You have to demonstrate and understand to us that you understand what goes into making a Purple Rose show.
Right, right.
And
but you have a definite, and I hesitate to use a word, template or process. You have a definite process here, and obviously it works for you. You don't survive this long without having a winning formula. In terms of just the logistics of running a theater, and that one of the things I was absolutely marveled at was. You know, you perform in a show here, you get a certain amount of comps, and you give those to people, and then the comps run out. And if you have a lot of actor friends like I do, you get people that just like, well, are there discounts? Like, can I go online, or is there a two for night or something? And I sent them to the website, and they all said there doesn't need to be. How do you keep the ticket prices as low as you do for basically Broadway in your backyard theater?
Well, we're a not-for-profit.
Okay.
And we have an outstanding board of directors.
Okay.
Who have to, and a great development department. I mean, we have to, we're above the national average, really. About 60 to 70% of our budget comes through ticket sales.
Okay.
And we don't have season tickets.
And you don't have season tickets. No. And you have a 168-seat venue, so it's not like you're, you know, filling stadiums here.
Right, right. But we're a town of 5,000 people, and we entertain about 40,000 people a year.
Wow.
So that's huge. And 60% of them come from outside the county that we're in. We have become a Great Lakes destination. And, you know, we market.
You fundraise.
We have to. We have to raise about $1 million a year.
Okay.
And that's how we're able to keep the prices down. Because if we had to, you know, if we counted on sales to exist, you know, we'd have to get $75 for a seat. And that's how we do it. We have a great board of directors, and I'm not just blowing smoke because you know it.
Conversation privately where you talked about that and you're not straying from that at all. I mean, it's obvious that you have an affection for them, and it's obvious they love what you're doing here.
They're great.
I'm wondering about you mentioned the local community and the different businesses and things like that. I do want to give a shout out to a few of them, and unfortunately I don't have anything written down because I don't want to overlook anyone. But the way one is received in this town, I always say that it's sort of like, for me, it's sort of theatrical Mayberry, because
you're not the first person to say that.
Everyone knows everyone, and the people at the Common Grill with a fantastic restaurant across the street. And you think, you know, oh, Chelsea, Michigan, small town. I would put that restaurant, Common Grill, up with any New York, Chicago restaurant. The quality of what they put forth is stunning. Cleary's Pub is a great place. The barbecue place, I think it was 52 on the corner.
Yeah.
The Chelsea Ale House, all of these different things. Perhaps I shouldn't just be listing places that serve alcohol.
Those are great places.
I spend my time in most of those places.
Well, you know, I wanted to know exactly what our economic impact was locally, you know,
right.
so I could stiff arm some of these guys. And so we commissioned a survey from Americans for the Arts out of the Kennedy Center. And what we learned was that, and we're talking about 40,000 people a year here, everybody who buys a ticket here spends an average of $33 in town over and above the ticket price.
Okay.
So I wasn't joking when I said, you know, there's a lot of businesses that depend on us for some of them as much as 80% of their income. The town is definitely part of the attraction. I think that's a compliment when somebody says it reminds them of Mayberry. I mean, you don't have to worry about parking. You're a 2-minute walk from some great restaurants. Yeah. It's really, really, and they're beautiful old Victorian homes.
Yeah.
And you know, odds are if you forget to lock your car, everything's going to be just fine when you get back there.
Right.
It really is an exception.
Not recommending it, but
no, not recommending it. But it's really an extraordinary. When I started working down here, I mean, I thought this isn't real. This can't be real. Yeah. I mean, you see families walking with the ice cream comes in the whole deal, but it's actually a very progressive little town, and it's part of the attraction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great weekend away without going too far. I mean, it's
no,
fantastic.
It is. Oh, and that's another thing. Speaking of weekend away, the other place that I stayed here, the Chelsea Inn,
yeah.
Chelsea
House,
a
right.
Beautiful B&B that is literally. I mean, I'm looking out the window of the theater right now, and you can see the place right here. Well, it's funny because the other thing is reminiscent of for me. I grew up in Ridgefield, Connecticut. I grew up in New England, and it's very much like that. If you walk down Main Street and were somehow able to look through your own eyes in sepia tone or in black and white, you would think it was, you know, 50 or 60 years ago. It just and I mean that with all affection and
absolutely. There are pictures in the library from 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, except for the cars and a few and some signage, it's virtually the same.
Well, there's a great story about a Norman Rockwell piece that's in the museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And he was commissioned to do a modern painting, an up-to-date painting of Stockbridge, and he had one that was about 50 years old. So all he did, because he was on deadline, was he did two period cars, two Mustangs or you know, of that era, one driving into town and one driving out of town. But the town was exactly the same because it hadn't changed in however many years.
That's great.
So I just love that one. So once again, folks, talking to Guy Sandville here at the Purple Rose Theater in Chelsea, Michigan. The website for the Purple Rose, purplerosetheater.org. That's with the R-E spelling on theater. And the upcoming season, God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza, which opens this Friday. Flint, a world premiere by Jeff Daniels. Sherlock Holmes and the Adventure of the Elusive Ear, a world premiere by David McGregor. And Willow Run, a world premiere by Jeff Duncan. So do go to the website, check that out, and support local theater and non-for-profit theater. We only have about 10 minutes left, but before we get there, I just want to ask you, Guy, about, you mentioned you think that all that actors should direct, and I'm not going to ask the incredibly trite, cliched question of which do you prefer, because for me, it's like New York pizza versus Chicago pizza. You don't compare the things. You view them as the independent entities that they are, mm-hmm. and you just look at it that way. But that being said, why do you think that is so? Do you just think because they've been in the trenches that actors are make for better directors? Because I know people that are exceptional directors and not the strongest actors in the world. I mean, it's a different skill set, but I'm just curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I also think actors should write. You know, actors are the one thing we can't do this without.
Right.
We can't. And we treat actors very well here. We expect a lot out of them. We just want to give everybody a chance to do their best work. But, you know, I act not very often anymore. But I've always, I mean, I'm a director by trade. I've always, my wife and I've always considered it a bonus when somebody's, you know, given me an acting job. I act, I've worked with and at least gotten to speak with, you know, lots of playwrights.
Right.
And whenever I meet a playwright, you know, Horton Foote, Susan Laurie Parks, anybody, I always ask them, what do you look for in a director? Because, you know, I'm a director. And they invariably all say the same thing, someone who's good with actors.
Yeah.
And there are directors who haven't acted, but I think you need to have, you don't need to be a good actor, but I think you need, the best ones I've worked with, and you talk to any good and experienced actor and they'll tell you that they've only worked with a handful of really good directors, but I really think that you know, it's if you've never acted before and you direct, it's sort of like being a judge without ever having tried a case.
Right.
And so I just, you know, especially, you know, that, I mean, I haven't done a lot of film and stuff, but I have, and very few of those people know how to talk to actors. Yeah. It's also result-oriented and everything.
I was just, that's exactly the term I was going to use. They got to get this done while they still have the light.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been on commercial shoots, and it's like, you remember that guy, that sergeant in the jumpsuit on Hill Street Blues? You're him. And I was
right.
Like, oh, okay, and I think I know what you mean. But we do something a little bit different. We get to rehearse. We get to find the thing together.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest difference. So I not all actors should direct, I guess, but or can or want to, you know. Jeff's directed a lot. He hates it.
He doesn't enjoy it, huh?
No, he likes dealing with the actors and stuff, but he doesn't care what the shirt looks like or what the color of the Snoop Dooker is going to be or any of that stuff. And I think if you're going to direct, you better have an eye for detail.
But he has written a number of the shows that have gone on.
He is a wonderful playwright. Yeah, he's a nationally. It's a little, you know, aggravating sometimes, that stuff that he can do. He's also an excellent musician and songwriter and poet, and he's made himself a really fine playwright. He's you know, we've been nominated for the George and Mimi Steinberg Award about 7 times, which is the award given every year to the best new play produced outside of New York. And we came in, we won it once, Book of Days by Lanford Wilson. And then we came in second once, and that was for a play that Jeff wrote called Across the Way. He lost out to a hack named Arthur Miller that year.
You know, it's all who you know. It's all who you know.
Who had written a new play for the Guthrie. And so, yeah, he's a terrific writer.
You mentioned Lanford Wilson, and there's a history here at the Rose with him as well.
Yeah. We wouldn't be having this conversation probably if it weren't for Lanford Wilson's belief in a tall, gangly actor named Jeff Daniels. And we produced, and I got to direct his last two full-length plays, which premiered here, Book of Days and Rain Dance. And he was a very close friend. We all miss him every day. He was an extraordinary man and an extraordinary playwright.
Wow, that's just, I mean, you think about it, it's one of those things that you say it aloud and it's just and Lanford Wilson. It's like that name is just so, you know, iconic in American theater, and I never use that word iconic. It's like eclectic. It's become a completely vanilla word. It gets used so much. But I I love the fact that people don't realize how much even what you would consider not only an established playwright, but a historic playwright will work on material up until the very end.
Here's what I've learned from him and Jeff and others, that they are ruthless with their own material.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They really are. They're interested in what their work inspires in other people. And which is a good thing for a playwright to be, because I mean it's a very, I mean a lot of people are going to have their hands on your work, and you know, just to sit in the room with him and watch him, you know, create this stuff. Same with Jeff. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They're just ruthless with their own material. Nothing is too precious.
Right.
And
well, that's why they're good, though.
Exactly.
Because nothing is engraved in stone. You get that all the time. You get those. My friend Jeff Ayer is a great writer, and he said, you always have to be willing. He writes comedy. Writes comedy exceptionally well. And he said, you always have to be, you know, lose your favorite joke, because you have it and then you love it too much. And then you passively don't realize that you're writing circles around it to keep it in there when it doesn't belong anymore.
I always know I'm in trouble if a playwright says to me, it's the best thing I've ever written.
Yeah. Right,
then exactly. I know, okay, we're screwed. Yeah. And Jeff says, you know, it's true. You can't rewrite a blank page. Right. Get to the end of that first draft and then we can go to work.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. My friend, another friend of mine, Ted Coach, who did the production, not the most recent production with Philip Seymour Hoffman of Death of a Salesman, but the one a few years ago with Brian Dennehy, the one that went to Broadway. Ted went to Broadway with that production from Chicago's Goodman as Hap Lohman.
Uh-huh.
And until a week before opening, Arthur Miller sitting in the house modifying the text. It's the greatest one of the greatest American plays ever written, Death of a Salesman, and he's tweaking the text right up until the end. And it wasn't like, oh, pop culture references or things like that. It was just dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, and that just absolutely astounds me. It really does.
Lanford was working on his complete works toward the end of his life there, and he was sitting there tinkering with stuff that he'd written 30 or 40 years before that.
Really?
They never absolutely. They never stop trying to get it right.
As you come into your 21st, you're in your 22nd year here, right?
Yeah, artistic director. Yeah.
Are there, with so many productions, I'm not going to ask about a favorite, I'm not going to ask about which you liked over something else, but if you can, are there one or two singular experiences that come to the front of your mind when you think about some of the productions that have taken place here?
Yeah, the first play I directed for Jeff, he wrote a play called Escanaba in the Moonlight, which is a comedy about deer hunters. And I was born in Escanaba. And we had about 80 of my relatives come down, and it was the first time they sat in a theater and saw a play about people they knew in a place they knew. Wow. I'll never forget that. And then being the first person to direct a new play by Lanford Wilson in 30 years who wasn't Marshall Mason, that was an extraordinary, and Jeff gave me a piece of advice that I carry with me to this day, because I was worried, you know, I mean, here's Lanford Wilson's going to be in the frickin' theater every day, and he said, listen, you do what you do the way you do it, or you're of no use to him and you're of no use to me. And that just gave me a lot of confidence. And Lanford and I hit it off immediately, because I had, you know, in 1979, 1980, somebody handed me a copy of Hot L Baltimore, and I read it, and I immediately went back and read it again, and it changed my life. I mean, I'd never read anything like it. You know, the overlapping dialogue and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah. And I started learning as much as I could about him and Marshall and the way they work. And to find, you know, to be sitting there and directing this play was, so that was huge. That that changed us as a company. And those two directing Jeff's work is an honor, you know, because he's terrific. And
you mentioned Hot L Baltimore and the overlapping dialogue, and one of my favorite plays by Lanford Wilson that is so difficult to produce because the cast is so big is Baum and Gilead.
Yeah.
And I just, and to give you an idea how progressive my amazing theater teacher, and her name is Joan Voss. She was my high school drama teacher, and we've remained great friends, and we chat on Facebook. But to give you an idea how forward-thinking she was, we did Rhymers of Eldritch as a high school production.
That's brilliant.
And while everyone else is doing like Hello Dolly or, you know,
what, Time Out for Ginger.
Time Out for Ginger or a, you know, the latest production of Our Town.
Yeah.
You know, all great plays, all, but let's face it, we've seen them fairly frequently. The Rhymers of Eldritch in Ridgefield, Connecticut in 1980. You know, you're jumping off the edge of the pool with no diving board there. You're taking some risks. And to this day, it remains one of my favorite theatrical experiences. Just the fact that as a young person, I was just entrusted with being able to perform stuff like that. One of the things that you mentioned as we wrap it up here, Guy, is something that I really want to stress to the listeners, that Mr. Daniels is actively involved in what happens here at the theater. I think a lot of people just think, oh, movie star, name over the door, that type of thing. And he really treasures this joint.
His family and the theater, kind of in that order. We all work in service of his vision, you know, and it's the work of my lifetime. And it's really great when you can provide for your family doing something you'd pay them to let you do.
Yeah. And as much as we talk about, have talked about Mr. Daniels, I know he would agree with me in saying that you are one of the primary reasons that this place is what it is. And people are very lucky to have you at the helm of this place.
Well,
and I hope you...
Thank you. I know it sounds hokey. I don't care. I still, you know, pinch myself.
I mean,
it's there's no place else I'd rather be.
It doesn't matter if it's true, it's not hokey. We're wrapping up an interview here with Mr. Guy Sanville, Artistic Director of the Purple Rose Theater. The website, again, purplerosetheater.org, and I say it in the affected way because it is written in the affected way, which is the only way it should be. Theater is spelled R-E at the end. Remember, R-E, theater is the art form, E-R is the building. That's what I've always said. purplerosetheater.org. Their upcoming season, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better way to spend the minuscule amount that they charge for tickets here. God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza opening this Friday. Flint, a world premiere by Jeff Daniels, opening January 18th of 2018. Sherlock Holmes and the Adventure of the Elusive Ear opening March 29th of 2018. And Willow Run, a world premiere by Jeff Duncan, June 14th of 2018. Guy, I have really appreciated spending this time chatting with you. Although we're working together, we don't get a chance to just sit and chat as frequently as we would like. Thank you for taking the time off your incredibly manic schedule to join us here on State of the Arts.
It's been great, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Guy. And Michael and Andrew, Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, you guys back in L.A. While I am envious of your weather, although right now I'm not envious of your weather because it's absolutely gorgeous here, but talk to me in a couple of months and then I may be envious of your weather. But miss you guys tremendously and look forward to listening next week, as I always do, with saying goodbye and signing off from beautiful Chelsea, Michigan and the Purple Rose Theater. Bye, guys.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.